Good afternoon, friends and neighbors. It's Thursday and it's 2:34 p.m. That means it's time for In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski joining us by phone from Juneau, here to give us some tips about how to make the most of our gardens and growing food and flowers in this climate. Also, before we dive into the program, we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping support this program. They are at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day but Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., with delivery available in the evenings. And they have bouquets by the jar or subscription available with colorful dahlias, snaps, and more. That's the Flower Farm, 772-3464. Make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Okay, and we've got Ed Byarski on the phone joining us from up north. How are things going, Ed?
Well, it's the fire danger has dropped off again here. We've had over an inch of rain in the last 2 days after a glorious first week of July. And the slugs have returned, but it's also, and we're digging and weeding, and but there's stuff we could be doing with those weeds, and we could be preparing for after harvesting of garlic, maybe starting next week or the week after, that cover crop planting is another item. Again, we should be thinking about always improving our soil.
Yeah, is cover crop planting part of that soil growing picture, or what are...
It is and can be for a couple of reasons. So, for example, when I harvest my garlic, seems like sometimes 15 or 20 minutes later, I am planting cover crops on that freshly turned ground for a couple of reasons. One is if there's nutrients left in the soil, the cover crop can grow and essentially take up those nutrients, and then a few weeks to a couple of months later, then they can be chopped into the soil, and again, they will then be essentially be composted and broken down by the microorganisms in the soil and such, and worms and all, holding some of that nutrients for the next crop, whatever that happens to be. And we may well be planning for, again, as far as timing goes, say we're looking at 1st of August, roughly, planting this stuff, the mixture. And then it grows, and it grows, and it grows really well. Like I say, it's taking up nutrients, but I don't normally add any nutrients to the soil before planting it. But again, this is holding the nutrients in the soil for us for next year's crop.
Holding it rather than letting it be leached away by erosion, rain, weather.
Exactly that. So basically it becomes slow-release fertilizer. That's what we're looking for. And the materials, the seed varieties that we use in our cover crops makes a difference. It certainly makes a difference in our cool climate and time of year and all that with the moisture that will be coming. So normally I'm planting a mixture of a one or two, actually often three different nitrogen fixing plants. In my case, the mix I'm using has some bell beans, which are a small seeded fava bean. They have field peas, so that's normally something that's used for animal feed. However, the nice thing about those two is that as they grow up, you can eat, you can pinch off the top 3-4 inches and toss those into your salads. So not only do you get some soil improvement capabilities, once the stuff is up there, maybe 8 inches tall, you're just taking a little bit off the top. Sounds like a haircut. And usually, in addition to that, there's usually a vetch goes in there too. That is not edible, and so you need to know what the different plants look like. And oats or barley or some other grain, which again most all of these are not perennial plants. These things will normally die over the winter time, but one of the things I do too, once they're grown up pretty tall, say by October or so, either I'll chop them off, just cut them off with a weed whacker or a sickle, or you know, just cut them off, lay them down, and throw the plastic over the top of them. And again, then that is that's where the worms and all the other microorganisms are going to be working. If you want to actually turn it under, just you know, chop it up with a hoe or something like that, or a little bit of a small rototiller, you can do that too. But it's really great, again, for holding those nutrients that we don't want to leach out. And like I said, again, it's a bonus in that we can eat some of it. And I suppose I know some folks do an oat grass tea or something like that, or smoothies. You know, this stuff can go into smoothies too, except for the vetch. And I haven't had good luck. A lot of folks also try to use and recommend, if we have a warmer climate, buckwheat as another plant that can be used for a cover crop. You know, all of these grow lots of green stuff that can be turned under, you know, and particularly holding nitrogen, and which is beneficial because nitrogen is what does leach out of the soil most easily.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
You know, other macronutrients like phosphorus and potassium, those, especially the phosphorus, is slow to leach. Potassium, maybe, again, depending on what form it is. But again, that plant material takes it up into the stems of the plant. And usually we cut this stuff off, you know, depending, you never know what kind of a fall weather we're going to have. We can assume it's going to be wet, and we're probably going to be right. But we might have a really nice, sunny a fall, too. So some of this stuff might even start to flower a bit. The vetch or the field peas might have a few flowers, and even fava beans, maybe not. You know, and I've even had the oats start to try to make grain on it, even planted, you know, 1st of August, that by October it's trying to make grains. But again, it's soft. And if you have some critters of your own, whether that be chickens or rabbits, geese or goats, some of this material could be fed. You could actually cut some of this stuff to feed to them too, to boost their diet.
Okay. Is there an issue where if some of the cover crop starts to go to seed that you want to make sure to like deadhead it rather than let it go back in to plant itself again?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for, yeah, that's kind of part of it. Although even I rarely have, I mean, occasionally some of the seeds don't germinate the first year. So, okay, well, I turn this stuff under, and then next year I have something else. I may have potatoes in there or carrots or whatever it happens to be. And I've occasionally seen seedlings, you know, they're recognizable. They're different than what I'm now, the new crop that's going in there. So occasionally I'll get a little bit of that. But the other reason actually to cut it at the stage, like at flowering time, that is the stage where the protein content, meaning the nitrogen content, is at its highest. So again, if you're using this for animal feed, then it would be most beneficial as a crop for that also. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the stage where you might be harvesting, well, somebody down south might be harvesting their hay that may have alfalfa and clover and other stuff in it for that purpose, for animals, for high protein, higher protein hay.
That makes good sense.
You know, so again, it's good stuff. It, you know, it's the sort of thing to order to get it into town from somewhere else. And there's the big seed catalogs, which Johnny's or Territorial or Peaceful Valley Farms in California. I've got 150 pounds of this seed coming, and it'll last for some years. You know, I've used up the last of mine, 150 pounds, from maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So you order it to come in. It is not something that's usually locally available unless you specifically ask for your local provider to bring it in.
makes sense. So we have a caller coming in now for the show. Let's find out what's on their mind here. Caller on line one, welcome to In the Garden. Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon. Hey, we had some issues with these white maggots. A couple years ago, we had them in our green onions on the outside planter, and then this year we had them show up in our daikon radish and Napa cabbage in our greenhouse. And the soil in the greenhouse this year was new soil. I wondered if you happen to know what they are and how you get rid of them.
Okay. Well, this doesn't surprise me at all. And the two you mentioned, onions and the cabbage family crops of various sorts. They are maggots, but they are two different species. They're fairly, you know, the little flies. Yeah, they don't look any different to you and me, but to the taxonomist, they are. Basically, the treatment is the same. However, you need to, when you plant them, you need to cover them up with the horticultural fabric, Rime or Agribon, to prevent the little flies, which are probably coming in from your neighbors. Well, or if you grew some of these in past years and had them, and depending on how you got rid of the old plants, they may have overwintered in the roots or in the soil around the old plants that were grown too. They are very common, unfortunately. And like I said, they will fly over from the neighbors. It's one of the reasons why we want to rotate crops. Don't plant your cabbages and turnips and rutabagas and radishes in the same bed or box this year that you did last year, because they'll come out of that bed from last year and reinfest, even if you have it covered with this lightweight fabric. Chemical-wise, to treat, once you have them, you're pretty much out of luck. You can't do anything much to save the plant this year. Really, the best thing you can do, like we kind of talk about all the time, is get rid of them, clean them up. So if you see they're really common on cauliflower, broccoli, cabbages. If you see those plants wilting on a sunny day, you know, and it may be only a few plants in the row of them, you know, and then you pull that plant, that wilted one, up, you can see those little maggots on the roots. Or on turnips, radishes, rutabagas, again, when you go to harvest them, you'll find the worms have burrowed tunnels in them. And again, the best thing you can do is to remove them, clean things up, don't plant back the same crop in that bed. And then just be very careful when you do plant the next crop. Literally, as soon as you plant either the seeds or transplants, that you cover them up with this fabric to protect the plants from the little fly that will lay its eggs at the base of the plants, and then down into the roots they will go to eat away.
Okay, so there's really no real good insecticide or anything that you can put on them to try to get rid of them for this year. I think a couple of years ago I looked up something on maggots, and they had like this concoction. It looked like you were making a Mexican dinner that they put on the soil.
Right.
I don't know if that. I tried it, and I really don't know if it worked or not. We never planted anything back in there, like, you know, those kind of crops again. So I don't know if it actually worked or not.
Right. So basically, you know, so what some of the concoctions you mentioned, I've seen everything from Tabasco sauce to ginger root powder and other different stuff. We've tried using diatomaceous earth. So you put this right around the base of each plant once you get them planted, and as a barrier. Wood ashes, they say, put around there. The problem, of course, is with most of these different things, once they get wet, and some of these are also supposedly repellent to slugs, but again, once they get wet, then they lose their effectiveness. And of course, considering we got, 7.5 inches, I don't know about you guys, but we got 7.5 inches of rain in June. Anything we put around them is going to get wet, unless they're, say, with hoops and plastic to keep them drier. I've seen other things. They take a square of an old asphalt shingle, or tar paper and cut a slit in it, put it around the base of the plant. I've tried aluminum foil. Same thing. You take a square of aluminum foil and kind of crumple it up around the base of a cabbage or a broccoli plant. And that one actually does work. The problem is you still get slugs living underneath the aluminum foil. So where you're maybe defeating one pest, you're making it easier, better for the other pest. And again, even the Remay over or horticultural fabric over isn't going to prevent slugs. You know, that too, you're going to have to do slug bait and other stuff. So, you know, we got multiple pests attacking the same crop, and it takes several different techniques to defeat them or at least move them down enough so you can get a crop.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, okay. Great. Well, thank you. Hopefully we can get rid of these little pests. So anyway, yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah. Ed, quick follow-up question on that one. In this soil, is there something that could be rotated into these beds that is impervious to these particular root maggots that would maybe, you know, kind of rotate the crops and give them a chance to be productive in these particular beds without feeding the maggots?
Right. I wish. Again, following up, you're changing crops. So, you know, if you had onion root maggots, you could probably plant cabbages into that same soil. They shouldn't be attacked by that because it's a different pest. I might not recommend that, however. But anyway, the onion root maggots attack onions, leeks, and shallots, but rarely garlic. I mean, occasionally I'll find a wormhole or two in a garlic bulb here and there, but pretty rare. So there's something, you know, garlic is probably more repellent to them or less tasty to them. Putting in there something, carrots or beets, potatoes, lettuce, Swiss chard, that kind of stuff, would be good as a rotation. I am told there are other crops and other pests that sometimes can be repelled by stuff that the roots, you know, either smells or chemicals that roots may give off, but I have not seen any great recommendations, that will kill off these critters or repel them. Particularly, say, if you were thinking, okay, well, how about if I alternate rows or have a bunch of two different kinds of plants there, that one plant is going to repel the insects that are attacking the other plant. And I have yet to see any good combination there either.
Okay.
So, you know, do the cleanup work, and even if you notice this, you know, if, like I said, with the cauliflower particularly, or these other ones, if you see them, especially this time of year, you know, dig up pull out the plant, but also even dig out the soil, dig out a cup or two, or maybe a quart of soil around them and dispose of that, you know, put it into a garbage bag or burn it, if you can get the stuff to burn on a brush pile. But otherwise, yeah, bag it and get it out of the ground. Don't compost this stuff.
Right.
You know, so they are pests. They are common here, unfortunately. And you might do a great job in being real clean in your garden and not have them. And then suddenly one year, well, they come in. I mean, I've had them. I've seen their effects on store-bought transplants.
Right.
Which is really bad news. So we're importing. I mean, it happens all the time. We bring new pests into the garden from imported plants.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's being careful with what you bring in and kind of inspect it as best you can. It's pretty tough to do when they're just tiny little, you know, small plants and very small worms, maggots.
Okay. So cleanup, crop rotation, being really mindful of the family of crops that are being targeted by these particular pests. And and then when it comes time to plant the next spring, covering them so that they just can't get at the roots.
Right. And of course, you know, record keeping, you know, to keep track of what did it, you know, maybe many of us can remember, oh, I had cabbage in that bed last year. I remember that, but my memory isn't what it used to be. So it's good to keep track of what you had in there and make a note of those issues, and even the timing of the issues too, because it's the sort of thing where the overwintering pupa of the little flies or maggots. You know, they overwinter in the soil.
Right.
And they come out after we've had a certain amount of heat units. Hmm. And certainly last week, when we finally had some heat units, which we didn't have much of in June, you know, it's the sort of thing where they emerged and away they went looking for their new host plants, their new food crop.
There you go. Okay. Well, and that's a good reminder, keeping good notes. I have my little notebook of personal disappointments where I just record my endless failures. Okay, we have another caller coming in on line 3. Hello, line 3. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ed. This is Karen Schrammick. Hey, I have a 2-year-old cherry tree that has always been really healthy and happy, and even with all this rain we've had, I mean, it just looked great. I kept looking at it like, you know, are you okay? And it was always fine. And then once the rain stopped a few days ago, probably about 4 or 5 days ago, and something started attacking the leaves. It's like brown spots all over them, and the leaves are turning yellow, and it's just spreading. I don't know what to do for it. Got any ideas?
Yeah, maybe. So the weather is certainly one of those issues, but again, the most common issue that we have are fungus issues. I mean, we talk about them all the time, and
uh-huh.
there's lots of them all around us. Cherry trees particularly get one, and depending on what I found, although I've seen them on just even straight, nice green leaves, where they look like the leaves have been shot holes, and they call this, and it's actually a fungus that drops on the leaf and causes a little piece of the leaf to die, and it falls out, and they call it shot hole fungus.
Oh, I don't have holes. I just have brown spots on the green leaves, and then the green leaves starts turning yellow, and the brown spots get worse.
Right. So there's no magic bullet for this one, again.
Okay.
But in our, we've talked about using the baking soda spray. That's a safe, cheap, and easy one to try. It will kill fungus on leaves, on plants and leaves, as it will in the, you know, on our bathroom wall, tile walls, or otherwise.
Uh-huh.
Certainly you can try that. So you said it really seemed to happen when we got the warm weather came on after the rain stopped for a little while.
Yeah, it survived all the rain, but then the rain stopped and this started, so...
Yeah, that's...
How much baking soda?
So the formula, it's a pretty simple one. 2 tablespoons of baking soda in a quart of water and 1 or 2 drops of a liquid soap, like Dawn or Joy soap,
okay.
or Dr. Bronner's, whatever kind of liquid soap you have.
Okay.
And you've got to keep shaking it because the baking soda, some of it dissolves, but some of it just settles out. So you keep shaking it and spray it and shake and spray
okay.
as you go. This can be used on apple trees also and other plants, roses that have fungus diseases too. So fungi do not get resistant to it, unlike some other pesticides and things, which is
okay.
a plus. It may or may not help a lot at this point. Is it the whole tree pretty uniformly spotted, turning brown or yellow, and I don't know if the leaves are starting to drop off too?
Yeah, the leaves are not dropping yet, but it's kind of spray. It's all the branches have some on it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good, but there is one other possibility too that, and that this is the time of year to see it, surprisingly, that even winter damage can happen. And June, July is common that your tree will leaf out nicely in the spring, might even flower in the spring.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly, yeah, like you say, the stuff turns brown and then leaves drop off. And that is very often winter damage. So whether it be the freeze-thaw action, and it doesn't matter that you said this tree you've had for several years.
Uh-huh.
doesn't seem to matter that either, that it just happens, and it can be a tree right next to it can be perfectly fine. You know, it's one of, you know, gardening mysteries or whatever, that there was some damage to the roots, essentially, that the frost penetrated more deeply there, or way back in, you know, last January.
Yeah.
Suddenly it went from 50 degrees on New Year's Eve to 10 degrees on New Year's Day, and then it got cold, and it was cold and stayed dry, no snow cover, so that can penetrate the cold soil and can damage the roots,
mm-hmm.
which trees need. So it's the sort of thing where the tree doesn't know it's dead for quite a while until finally it can take up no more, or there's nothing more coming up out of the roots, and you'll see that that browning off fairly quickly too, like over the course of a week.
Huh. Wow, yeah, that's kind of what's going on, so.
Wow.
Okay, well, I'll try the baking soda and keep my fingers crossed, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and baking soda, too, like I said, is good for other fungus and for apple trees right now. If you have had apple scab in the past, you can use it on the apple trees, too. You know, spray it on leaves as well as on the fruits.
Uh-huh.
And you can spray it once a week if necessary, if you have some of these trees with this issue. And unless we stay dry for a week or two, then you don't have to spray probably, but you know, so again, it's kind of a funny contrast where suddenly things got warmer, and essentially that means that the tree is trying to pull up more nutrients and water out of the roots, and it can't.
Oh. Okay. Well, thanks. Learn something new every day.
Yeah, definitely. Quick follow-up question for you, Ed. If it does happen to be that winter damage, is there anything Karen can do there to support, like fertilize these roots, give them a little bit of a fighting chance to bounce back this fall and winter?
Yeah, not, unfortunately, probably not. I mean, that's one of the standard thoughts that, hey, my tree is dying, let's give it some fertilizer. I mean, you probably won't make it die any faster, but it isn't necessary. Unless there are some undamaged roots on part one side of the tree, potentially, and that's common enough, that one, you know, it's maybe mostly one side versus a different side of the tree. That side of the tree may have been more exposed to the cold for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
Next, a concrete wall or a rock wall or something where the frost penetrates more deeply, more quickly. So one side might well be more so than the other. That may make a difference in keeping part of that tree alive. And the other thing is just water. When it was dry, you know, maybe water might make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But now nature is supplying that to us, so.
Okay. Well, lots to think about there. Thank you very much for that call there.
Okay, bye.
All right. Well, those are important issues that people are facing, and good answers there. Thanks, Ed.
Well, yeah, like I said, I couldn't give the magic bullet to say, yes, spray this stuff and your tree will come back most miraculously. You know, that stuff dies, and sometimes we don't have a good, definite reason for it. Our old extension agent used to call it, his favorite was with lilacs, you know, lilacs dying. Oh, well, your lilac, it has lilac decline. Sort of a generic term for, we don't know what the heck it is.
Makes sense. That's, you know, that is a part of life, you know. And it kind of brings us to maybe one final topic, maybe kind of composting and making a plan for, you know, turning the end of life of some things into new life for the next things.
Yeah.
Is this the time of year to be thinking about making your plan for composting and that sort of thing?
Certainly, and whether we're adding to an existing compost pile or we're thinking about, or maybe we're building new compost bins perhaps, or looking at the materials around us, whether we're stuck, you know, the old plants, whether that be cabbage family crops that we may not want to compost, we want to just plain get rid of those. You could cut off the top so you don't make sure you don't have the root in your to go into the compost. But the planning for it, and again, you don't want to throw if you're, you know, ideally we'd compost our weeds, and I talked about making the weed juice earlier in the season. Ideally, we're not using throwing in there the plants which have flowers or seed heads on them, because if we aren't making hot compost, getting up to 130 degrees or more, then we aren't able to kill the weed seeds that we are putting into our compost. So being careful of that. And the other thing is, too, if we've got some unfinished compost, say we're getting ready to, you know, we're kind of maybe planning ahead, we'll, next week or the week after, we'll talk about harvesting garlic, and or we'll be talking about getting ready to plant garlic some months later, that this would be a time to be, if we've got the ground ready for it, we can be mixing in compost, or even if your compost isn't finished, isn't that beautiful brown, crumbly material that we all hope for, that smells really nice and rich and all that, we can potentially bury that in our garden beds or boxes and let the worms and the soil microorganisms work on it until planting time comes, and whether that's putting stuff in there now or whether we're digging holes in beds and throwing some compostables into there and just work on that using some of the, or planning to use fall leaves when they come down, whether it be alders, willows, cottonwood, maple leaves, and other assorted stuff, wild stuff that's coming to us, and think about getting our seaweed whenever it comes. If we're out, somebody's out fishing, and you have your handy dandy buckets and garbage bags, well, hey, look at, there's a big lot of kelp. Let's bring that home for our garden. So we can plan for composting. We can be adding to our compost. I've got a bin out here now that's pretty much full with household compost plus horse manure. So now I've got to keep turning it to break it down and then find another spot to throw my home compost in. It may go into the new horse manure pile that my neighbor just brought over here. And you can compost just about anything in a dump truck of horse manure.
Yeah. Okay, nice. So good considerations. So getting beds ready for planting garlic is something people should be keeping an eye out starting now, eh?
Yeah, think about it. You know, that's something that won't happen until late September or October. So whether we're going to be harvesting our potatoes or carrots or cabbages, lettuce, Swiss chard, whatever we're harvesting. And again, we've got our little notebook, so we know that we haven't planted garlic in that bed for a couple of years. And so that, you know, we're planning ahead for where it's going to go, so then we can plan ahead for what goes into that bed in preparation.
Yes. Excellent. Okay. Planning. Another reminder of the importance of planning in the garden.
Yeah. I mean, we do lots of random stuff and throw in some seeds here and there and say, oh, I got some leftover stuff. Let's throw that in there and maybe it'll grow, maybe not. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So a little planning and a little bit of random guerrilla gardening sometimes pay off too.
Absolutely. Well, how about we leave it there, and then we'll pick it up on our next show.
Okay, sounds good, Aaron. Okay. Let's hope there's sunshine by then.
Yeah, could be. All right, thanks so much, Ed, for joining us here and bringing some answers to the questions that come up about how do we do it here in the rainy, temperate rainforest. How do we grow? And your advice is very helpful, Ed. Thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome, Warren.
Okay. That is In the Garden for this week. You can always check out our website, kfsk.org, and find the recordings of these shows up there and browse the topics and, yeah, check it out if this show just whets your appetite but doesn't fill you all the way up. I forget all